This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
South Dakota Senate Taxation Committee will come to order. I want to welcome everybody here and all the guests, all the new people. Before we start all my speeches, we'll have the secretary call the roll.
Senators Ewing?
Here.
Feagin?
Here.
Frerichs? Hagar?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Greenfield?
Here.
Monroe?
Here.
Did you get Jenna?
Yes.
Okay. There's a quorum present, and I would like to welcome everybody that's new here. Let's see. See a couple new faces. And I want to greet the internet listeners. Thank you for listening, and we'll do the best we can for South Dakota. And speaking of new people, we have some smoozing to do here because we have a new senator here. And I wanted to say that when you have 35 people as close as we are, you're usually suspicious of new people. And if you know me at all, I can get real suspicious of new people. But as I have come to know this guy and interrogated him silently and unknowingly, he gets the same head tilt and eye rolls as I get, not quite as bad, but when I mention my hot spots, so I know he'll be a good man for the committee. And I want to welcome you, Senator Feagin. I'd also like to welcome the pages who are finally getting broken in after their first week. So the second week, they know exactly what they're doing right and wrong. And they don't do anything wrong, really. But I'd like to have you introduce yourselves. Come up here and tell us your name. Whichever one wants to go first, and tell us where you're going to school, hopefully what you plan to do.
My name is Ben Williams. I go to Aberdeen Christian School right now, and my plan is to either make it into West Point or the Air Force Academy, and if I fail to make it into both of those, I will be doing ROTC at SDSU for mechanical engineering.
Thanks, Ben.
My name is Steven Diacono. I currently go to New Technology High School in Sioux Falls. My future career, I want to go to the Marine Corps and then hopefully be a Judge Advocate General.
Wow. Got two flag wavers here. That's my kind of committee. Thank you. I'd like to remind everybody to turn off their electronic devices. I don't really care if they're in here as long as I don't know about it. And that's all we need to say there. A couple things for the committee. Act like you're paying attention if people are testifying, even if you don't care. But everything that's said here is important, and so we want to let people know that we appreciate when they come and give their opinion about what they think is best about South Dakota and what they'd like to do. During testimony, I want you to understand it's okay to ask questions of the people that are testifying. We don't have to wait till it's all over so that you don't forget what your question is or the train of thought isn't lost. If you have a idea for a motion, or you'd like to introduce a motion or a substitute motion or whatever you'd like to do with maneuvering, it's better if we just talk about things before we start doing motion combat, and then we can decide if we want to spend the time with a motion or not. Senator Greenfield, do you have anything to say? I'd like to hear it. He's the vice chair.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask if the intern or interns in the room wanted to come up and introduce themselves as well as we get going here.
I'm Tate Watson. I'm currently going to USD for History and Political Science, originally from Brookings, and hopefully I'd like to become a professor.
And that would be about it, Mr. Chairman. I was disappointed to hear that he's from USD. It's sad. Sad deal. I thought he was a good person until then, but I'm not sure now. No, but I look forward to this year. It appears that many of the tax issues won't be coming through the tax committee at a glance. So I guess maybe we can go and testify in favor of or in opposition to those as they go through other committees that are not devoted to the subject of tax. But perhaps we'll get some good bills assigned to us as time goes by, too. We'll see.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anything else to be said, or anybody want to throw anything in before we get started? Today, we have, it's going to be an informational briefing every year. We like to do this. We have Andy Gerlach. He's the head of the Revenue Department. And we go way back, and we half these people in the Revenue Department I've known since they were kids. So I'd like to welcome you all, and go ahead and get started if you'd like to.
Thank you, Chair Monroe, and members of the committee. And it's always fun to come back into 423 and visit with Senate Tax. And it's the thing I like about this committee, and Senator Feagin, I think you're going to appreciate this, is you really get the opportunity to talk at an intimate level, talk about issues that are important to South Dakota, taxes, philosophies, and you get that with this group. And I always appreciate the candor that you give to us and the respect that you give to our staff when we offer opinions. And I know I speak for all of them. It's great to come to Senate Tax. And Chairman Monroe, it's always great to dialogue with you. And I'd also like to make a shout out to the two interns and appreciate your interest in military service and very honorable and noble thing. And I hope that works out for you guys. So, as the chairman said, I'm going to give just a short presentation today. Most of you have heard our at-length presentation from the Tax Committee and have been around and understand that, but I thought it was a good idea in working with the chairman to talk about a few things related to taxes and revenue in South Dakota to get us in the right frame of mind. And then Senator Greenfield, I know that there's going to be bills that come to this committee that we're going to have to work closely with you guys on and advise you and give you some analysis and input on how we go forward. So I look forward to another good year. And again, I always enjoy coming to Senate Tax. I've got 10 slides today, not a lot of them, but what I want to do again is start out talking about our department. And the Department of Revenue in South Dakota is made up of 250 proud professional employees that really do take their work seriously. And we have 8 offices, one in Pierre here where we have a lot of the leadership team, but we also have offices in Aberdeen and in Watertown and in Sioux Falls, Yankton, Mitchell, and Rapid City, and then our gaming office with our gaming division that oversees Deadwood Gaming is located in Deadwood. So I'm really proud of our staff, and they're very committed to helping our customers, the citizens of South Dakota, understand tax, because it doesn't come easy to all of us all the time. And I think one of the big things that we do is educate. So when you look at our leadership roster there, really proud of that, and there's a lot of experience there. Several of which are in the room today. Our Deputy Secretary Dave Wiest is here. Most of you have worked with Dave a lot, and he's a wealth of knowledge, having been in this tax game for over 20 years in the Department of Revenue, so he's very accessible. Got a couple new faces with the department this year. Our Audit Director Rachel Hearn is here. I know Rachel testified in committee a couple times last year, but in the past year, she's received a promotion to be our audit director. Bruce Christensen, who you remember as our audit director, retired Earlier this month, Bruce had 40 years of public service, 20 as the audit director, and Rachel was a natural selection to succeed Bruce, and proud to have her on the leadership team, too. Tony Richardson, also with us today. Tony is our director of administration, and she kind of keeps us all straight and does a lot of our coordination during legislative sessions. So good to have Tony here as well. Mike Houdyshell, I believe, is in the back, our property special taxes guru. And I know the information and counsel that he gives to this department, or this committee, is important. And then we have Courtney Dosh here. And if Courtney, would you raise your hand? Courtney is our education coordinator. And what she does is she sets up a lot of our outreach education seminars with the public. And this year she's also going to be serving as a committee monitor. So you'll see her in committee there. And I know she'll help us and you as well. So that's our leadership team that we have with me today. And then you can see the other 8 division directors that we have as part of our department. An audit division, business tax division, motor vehicles, property special taxes, legal, administration, lottery, and gaming. Okay, why do we have taxes? To raise revenue to fund government. So I wanted to just throw in a slide that shows you how much revenue that we do get off of the taxes we have in South Dakota. Sales and use taxes is the workhorse. Out of our $1.4 billion state general fund budget, you can see it funds well over two-thirds of that, $840 million this year. Fuel tax, interestingly, is our second biggest generator, and although it doesn't go to the state general fund, it goes to the highway fund. And I mentioned that because of Senate Bill 1 last year, and I talked to the Transportation Committee about that earlier. But that's interesting, I think, for us to keep our eye on. Is that generating the revenues that we need to fund our highways? The lottery is the third biggest contributor and second to the general fund. And again, when we talk about the lottery, we talk about instant online video lottery. Yeah, $112 million to the general fund. So the lottery does a great job funding our efforts as well. Contractors' excise tax, it's the fourth overall, but the third largest contributor to the general fund. And again, that's 2% on your construction projects. Ironically, South Dakota and New Mexico are the only two states that have this tax. And from time to time, we debate it up here and decide whether we think it's good or we want it or not. But it does get us some pretty significant dollars. Special taxes, you'll see there, special taxes are a bank franchise tax, alcohol tax, a cigarette tax. You see a dip there from 14 to 15, and that's mostly because of the bank franchise tax going down. We're getting less off of that. The last three, vehicle excise tax, that's the 4% that you now pay when you purchase a vehicle at the treasurer's. That goes to the highway fund. And then tourism tax and Deadwood Gaming round out the taxes that we collect in the Department of Revenue. I wanted to include one other item. You'll see a little bullet. Is that going to pop, Tony, or do I have to? There we go. Okay. So we're going to talk about teacher salaries this year in state government. We're going to talk about increasing taxes in state government this year. And although Senator Greenfield, you said it may not come to this committee, you'll be a part of it. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Senator Peterson, did you have a question?
A question, if I may. The farm machinery, how much was that off?
Farm machinery, do we have a number on that this year?
Just get it to me sometime during
okay.
the committee.
Are you asking from year to year?
That's right. How much sales were off, you know, because of low prices? I know that there's really been a hardship in our implement dealers.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Mr. Chair, we'll follow up and get that information. But you bring up a good point, and I'll just comment. The ag economy still is the major driver of our tax revenue. So when commodity prices are good and the ag economy is good, then our tax revenue is going to reflect that.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Half a cent, or what's that, or 0.5%, what's that get us? $107.4 million. And that's our estimate. So as you look at other bills and in raising the state sales tax, that's the number that we have. And I just wanted to throw that out there so you have that frame of reference.
That'll be very useful. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Okay, let's see how we rate compared to other states. And what we like to do is compare to our surrounding states how we rate in our taxes. And this is from the Census Bureau and some economic analysis that we do. But even with raising the gas tax last year, you'll see in the first column, we're still below all of the other states, or a lot of the other states. Our sales tax at 4% is the lowest, along with Wyoming in the region. We don't have an income tax. Cigarette tax at $1.53 is right in the middle there. And then what we say is our per capita tax burden of what individuals pay, and this doesn't include the property taxes here, is $1,886. So again, you can see when we compare ourselves to the surrounding states, we're on the lower end, if not the lowest. So, and again, that's important as we think about taxes and living in South Dakota, where we rate, particularly in the surrounding area. Yes, sir.
Now, does the per capita tax burden just apply to those four items, or is that, I don't see how Wyoming with taxes as low as they are compared to South Dakota ends up with like 2.1 times more per capita. Does that include other taxes besides just those four?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Okay. We have... if you look at our annual report, it gives a little bit better detail, but we figure in all of the taxes, but we include these four because they're the ones that give us the best comparison, at least initially. So, yep, good question. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the things that help us generate revenue in South Dakota. Some things maybe we don't think about. The 75th rally at Sturgis this year was a great event. We collected a record number of revenue, almost twice as much as we'd had in 2014. It's interesting when you see the effects of the Sturgis rally, and it's really become almost a Hills rally to where it's not just Sturgis, but a lot of other areas throughout the Hills, throughout South Dakota, benefit from this. So I want to just give you some idea of what we collect there. And then we also did have a record number of licensed vendors this year. The department works very closely with the city of Sturgis and the communities. And what we try to do is get out beforehand, get the vendors licensed, give them the ability to pay their taxes to us. And we do that through a partnership we have with Sturgis. We set up at their city hall. And then this year we also went out to the Buffalo Chip. So you were in the campgrounds east of town. You didn't have to drive in and had a good relationship with the Buffalo Chip as well. And we also like to do some cool things. So this year we incorporated more GIS technology. We put all of the vendors on GIS, and we had their information and tax information where they're located. So our agents would go out, visit them, work with them. They could walk around with a device in their hand and find them. And sometimes that's not very easy. But anyway, I wanted to give the committee an idea of what the department does working with local government on the Sturgis Rally. And then we also work closely with the State Fair and other large events in South Dakota. A lot of times in the legislature, we talk about subjects that are a little bit difficult to understand. Use tax is one of them. And you try to get your arms around what this use tax thing. So I put together a slide here to talk about that. A use tax is the same as sales tax. It's the same rate, not in addition. And in conversing with the chair recently, I thought he put it in a really good way. Senator Jeff Monroe earlier this month said, if you didn't pay 4%, you owe 4%. So maybe that's the best way to understand use tax.
I want to know who's responsible for that. Thank you.
anyway, it's something that we have and we just all need to be conscious of. The use tax is paid by the user when appropriate. Sales tax isn't collected. And again, it's destination-based, so where you received it is where you owe the use tax. And in many cases, the municipal tax would also come into play there. Use tax also has an effect on our online sales, how we're doing commerce in this country. And I wanted to give you a couple of statistics related to that. From 2014 to 15, what we saw is an increase of 14% on online sales. People are shopping online more. It's more convenient. It's something that they want to do. And the result of that is it's costing the state of South Dakota about $46 million a year total, $31 million to the state general fund and $15 million to municipalities, because we really don't have a legal way to collect that tax. So 14% in the last year. I will bet you that next year when I come talk to this committee that it's going to be similar in double-digit increases where people are shopping online again. And we just don't, in the department, have the ability to monitor all of that and where people are shopping. It's on the honor system of submitting the use tax. So it's not something just South Dakota deals with. We're dealing with this across the country, but online shopping is definitely on the rise. And one other side note to that is, you know, South Dakota participates in the Streamlined Sales Tax Project, have for years. And what we try to do is get companies to license voluntarily online, even if they don't reside in South Dakota, voluntarily license with us, remit taxes. And if you buy something online, sometimes you'll see that that tax is automatically generated in your bill. And they'll even calculate the municipal taxes. So right now we have about 2,000 companies that are not located in South Dakota that are voluntarily registered with us and remit taxes. So again, this is something that is evolving, and the department is trying to stay on top of it to ensure compliance. Direct Wine, I wanted to give you an update. Last 2 years in the legislature, we talked about direct wine and direct wine shipments quite a bit. From last year, we passed House Bill 1001 authorizing in-state and out-of-state wineries to ship directly to South Dakota customers. And as of this week, we had 102 wineries that have licensed with us. And again, it allows you as a citizen to go online and order wine, have it delivered to your house. And these companies, most of which are out-of-state, do license with our Division of Property and Special Taxes. And you can see they must obtain a license, remit sales and alcohol taxes, and file the returns electronically with us. So I would say the legislature's effort in the last couple years with this has been successful, and continue to keep you updated there. I want to talk about audits a little bit. I know many times when you're out talking to your constituents, or you may go home for a Cracker Barrel, they may say, "Well, I'm getting audited by the Department of Revenue. Why am I getting audited from them?" And we try to be transparent in how we audit, and I wanted to give you an idea of why and how we do audit. So you see on that slide, there's seven areas that we really look at in terms of an audit selection method. First one is we get leads. That's from our auditors or in the news or building permits or construction contracts, and we may look at that and we say we think we have some compliance problems there. So our audit selection specialist in our audit division will say, "Hey, one of our auditors, why don't you go out and visit with them and see if there's any issues there." The second one is a 1099-K, which is an IRS form. The IRS now shares information about businesses with us. So what we can do is if there's a business, we can request the 1099-K information, compare the credit card sales of that business to what they gave us from their receipts, and if we see any issues there, that's one thing that we'll look at to probably go and audit. That's pretty new. The IRS hasn't shared that type of information with us long. We'll also look at past audits. If we have a taxpayer with a large audit assessment, that it doesn't look like they're correcting their spending, we'll go and audit them again. We'll do a follow-up. And we usually try to do it immediately thereafter. Our goal is to get people in compliance, and if we do that and if we work with them on that, we think that that will help with that effort. We have a point system, too, that we look at based on activity and assign some risk. Where we have a higher number of points, we'll indicate issues, and there's some analytics related to that, as you see in the next bullet. We also have relationships with our states around us, and Senator Peterson, you bring up a good point. Midwest border states, we all work together to look at companies that do business in more than one state. Interestingly, one of those industries is farm machinery and farm implement dealers, to where if you go purchase a combine or a tractor in Minnesota and you bring it over to South Dakota to use it, you owe use tax on it. One of the things we've tried to do with our surrounding tax departments is work with those industries so that that implement dealer in Minnesota make sure that you pay taxes right when you get that piece of machinery, and so we don't come in a couple, 3 years later and on that $500,000 combine find out you owe $70,000. So that's one example of working with our surrounding states and ensuring that people that do business across borders are doing it correctly by the state tax laws. And then business size. We routinely audit the 350 largest taxpayers in our state. Think about the largest businesses in the country, and they're doing business in South Dakota. So when you go into a large retail store that does businesses in a lot of states, they're obviously doing a lot of business here too. A lot of times, if there's a little issue with a big company, it means a lot of money to us. So that's why we routinely audit the 350 largest taxpayers. And just so everybody knows, we've got about 102,000 companies licensed with us right now, and we do about 3,500 audits a year. And we think with our staff, and that's the right number, but we audit about less than 5% of the companies each year. So anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because, again, audits is sometimes a term that scares people, and why am I getting audited, or how does the department look at it? And hopefully that gives you some good perspective on how and why we do that. A couple other slides here. I want to talk about the lottery. Again, that's part of the Department of Revenue. It's important to provide funding for education and highways and the environment. Lottery revenues go into the general fund. And every dollar that we get out of the lottery is reinvested in South Dakota. So we have the pleasure a lot of times of presenting lottery winnings to South Dakotans. Recently, Susan Nichols won $6.7 million at Johnson Siding. And it's kind of funny with her story. Every time she would stop to fill up her vehicle, she would buy a lottery ticket. And that was just part of her mode of operation. And she did that, and it got $6.7 million out of it. So it's kind of funny when you talk to people and you say, well, do you buy often or how do you buy? And you get some interesting stories like that. And again, $112 million to the State General Fund. And Senator Peterson, who used to be on our Lottery Commission, is a great advocate for that. And he gave us some good counsel. So, you know, everybody's got an opinion on the lottery. And do you like it? Do you not like it? Is it good? Is it bad? But the bottom line is, if we're going to have low taxes in South Dakota, we need to have some source of revenue that generates money for us. And I think in the last 27 years, the South Dakota Lottery has definitely done that. Last thing I'll talk about is our gaming division. And again, I want to give the committee an update of some legislation that you passed last year. We had an amendment on the ballot to add craps, roulette, and keno to Deadwood Gaming. The bill then came to the legislature last year, and you gave the okay with it. It became effective July 1st of 2015. There you can see it. It hasn't been something that everybody has adopted, with six Deadwood casinos offering the new games and a variety of different games that they implement. Part of the part of the issue with these games is you have to have people at that table that are experienced, that know how to manage these games. And from what I understand, some of the casinos are saying, you know, it's not worth it right now for me to invest in that human capital to have this game in my casino. So not everybody's doing it. Some of the casinos that are doing it, you can see their dollars wagered have increased a little bit over last year, 10%, and they attribute this to the new games. Typically, people who play these games aren't going to come play a slot machine. They're going to come and play these games. So the businesses see this as something they want to market. Slot machine handle in Deadwood has increased 2.3%, pretty flat over the last year. And then the tribal casinos can also offer anything that's in our Deadwood casinos. And to date, no tribal casinos are offering any of the new games. So anyway, again, a bill that came through the legislature last year, I wanted to give you an update on. So with that, I wanted to give, again, a 30,000-foot view of what's going on in the department, give you some feedback on some recent legislation or initiatives that you guys have passed, and again, offer my support and our staff's technical support to the committee throughout the session. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Secretary Gerlach. Don't go away.
I'm here.
Do we have any questions from the committee besides mine? You must have done a great job, but I have some. I have a question. I really like technology, but my brain still works like a slide rule, and I'm not sure which one to ask, who to ask. But on the streamlined situation in the interstate compacts, can you take just a few minutes and explain how you go about gathering data about companies in other states that do business here? That's number one. Number two is companies throughout the country. And number three, what is the type of technology you're looking at considering the parabolic increase in computing speed now and capabilities? Kind of go through that just for 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't, just a broad overview.
Right. I'll start with our technology, and that's something that we're always looking to evolve. And if you get licensed with us in our business tax division or our motor vehicle division, our systems are really top-notch, and we have something in our business tax system called ePath that if you have an account with us, and if you go out there, it's very similar to what you would have with your credit card company and your account. It gives you the ability to pay your bill online, electronically, quickly, and it's something that our customers are asking us more to do and more options for. We also have added to our South Dakota CARS system the ability to go in and register all of your vehicles. So if you have an account with us, you can see all of the vehicles you have out there, and you can put in some calculations that will show you all of the fees or taxes on that vehicle, and basically allows you to manage your vehicle inventory on our system as well. So we're trying to keep up with what our customers want us to do, and using technology is a way to do it. So that's a major initiative of the department. The second thing is working, like you said, Mr. Chair, with businesses from out of state. Streamlined sales tax allows us to do that. It allows us to, like I said, license these companies, but also ensure that we try to get all of the taxes owed in South Dakota paid. There's a term called nexus, and if you're a company that doesn't have nexus in a state, a lot of times you don't legally have to pay a tax, and nexus deals with physical presence. So if a company has a store or a call center or something in South Dakota, they actually have a physical presence. So legally they have to remit that tax. Companies like Amazon don't have a physical presence in our state, so they don't have to remit the tax. But through organizations like the Streamlined Sales Tax, we try to continue to get compliance there. And your final question, I think with some of the larger companies that are doing business here, you know, we try to stay on top of it and track who is doing business here so we can collect that tax. So I hope that hits on the areas, Mr. Chair, that you were looking at.
Thank you. I'm going to follow up on the out-of-state. My visualization of what happens, let's say you've got a company in Louisiana that does online sales in South Dakota, and let's just say it might be a significant amount, enough to put them on the radar. Mm-hmm. Okay, is the procedure a phone call, a paper letter, an email? Is it a, maybe you consider things like apps that you'd find on an iPhone? Anything like that? What is it? What's the procedure? I mean, what happens from point A to point? And let's say that they're a compliant company. They want to do what's right. And what's the procedure? What happens materially and digitally between the time that you see this on your radar and the time that they get a license here?
Yeah. So if there's a, let's use the term construction company, because that's a good one because they're fairly mobile. There's a construction company from Louisiana that's doing business in Vermilion, South Dakota. And we come across them and say, hey, we think that, you know, you're obviously doing business with on this project here. We think you'll contractors excise tax and should be licensed with us. So what we would do is we would send them a letter and say, based on this project and our findings here, we think that you should be licensed and remit tax. That would then be followed up by a call from an agent saying, hey, what can we do to get you licensed? So we would do everything that we can to get them licensed. We don't have the phone app options, you know, where we want them yet, but we want to evolve in that. But what we would try to do is get them licensed through ePath. And as I talked about before, if we can get them set up with an account and then they can remit their taxes, and if they continue to do business, we think that that simple option, convenient option, will help them be compliant. But again, to your point, I think technology and the tax world go hand in hand. And as people use different technology and options, state tax departments are trying to keep up with that as well.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Senator Hagar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always good to see you.
Likewise.
Question about a contentious bill of the debt collection agency last year. Do you have updates on that?
Mr. Chair, I do. And thank you for bringing that up. And had that stayed in the Department of Revenue as its home, then I would have given you an update. But as you remember, it went over to the Bureau of Administration. And throughout the last year, Senator, there's been meetings. And I know there's been some legislative oversight. I know Jim Hood from the retailers provided some oversight. And our staff has been a part of that. And they've gotten to the point right now where they've worked with the company CGI. They've worked with the private sector debt collectors to identify a process. And I believe they're about ready to implement it with the unified judicial system being the first part. And if I could, Mr. Chair and Senator, Dave Wiest from our department has been part of that working group. Dave, would you mind coming up and giving some more detail?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Wiest. To answer your question, Senator, the Obligation Recovery Center, as the Secretary said, has entered into a contract with CGI to essentially operate it in the Bureau of Administration. What they're working on is think of it as a series of steps to get ready for the debt to be transferred to the Obligation Recovery Center. One of the things that they're working on is a memorandum of understanding between the ORC and the first entity, for example, the Unified Judicial System, on confidentiality concerns and how the interest rates work, because interest rates work for UJS differently than they do for the Department of Revenue. So they have to have all that sorted out and set forth in the memorandum of understanding between the UJS is not an agency. It's obviously a third branch of government. But so there's a series of things. Step one is the memorandum of understanding. Step two is going to be what they call the kind of the final notice letter, where it's the letter that has to be sent out by the Unified Judicial System folks to the debtor to make sure that they're on notice that now is the time to pay your debt, because if it isn't paid, I think the time period is after 14 days, it could very well be or will be transferred over to the Obligation Recovery Center. And again, the Obligation Recovery Center has the ability under this statute to add 20% on top of the principal for purposes of self-funding it. That's in that in the bill from last year. So they're working on the final notice is what they call it. And then there's going to be an onboarding. And the first entity to be onboarded is the UJS. And tentatively, they're looking at April month 2016. I can't tell you how close or how accurate that's going to be. There's a lot of moving parts to get together. One of the things you got to think about is that CGI has their own computer system, and so they've supplied us with a number of documents, and here's the fields that we have to get our data to fit into so it can transfer over to their data. And then you have to be able to, once the debt is paid at the Obligation Recovery Center, it's got to get back to the UJS, for example, or eventually back to the Department of Revenue. I think the department is scheduled to be onboarded. I believe it was tentatively October. They may have moved it up to September, if my memory is correct. I go to a meeting about once a month, Obligation Recovery Center steering meeting, because the Department of Revenue, while it isn't in our shop, we also are involved in the sense that one of the parts of the bill is the ability to say that you can't renew your license plate tags if you owe this debt and you haven't made made an agreement with the Obligation Recovery Center to pay it. And that obviously works with the Department of Revenue, our Motor Vehicle Division, but also with our county treasurer partners. And that, you know, we haven't even started working on that component on when that will come online. They were tentatively thinking the middle of the summer, but I don't know for certain. But we're working to sort out those issues as well to make certain that our system flags the right person, for lack of a better term. And then that person who is flagged, if they're at the county treasurer's office, they have a quick and immediate and easy way to figure out how to get that issue resolved so they can get their vehicle tags, of course. And so we're talking about those issues as well in the ORC steering meeting. At the meetings, we have Representative Partridge, and I believe Senator Haverly is also, I'm pretty sure she's one of the legislators as well, if my memory is correct, that have been participating as part of the oversight of the legislature in this process. But a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that need to get done before the debt actually gets turned over, a lot of mechanical stuff that is obviously going on in this whole process. So we're very early, and it's we'll see how it goes. Ask me in a year, I'll have a much better report and idea how it's going. How's that?
You betcha, Senator.
Do you by any chance remember if, first of all, if there's a minimum to the debt, and then also what some of the fees reimbursements to the Obligation Recovery Center would be, how they're kind of how that would work?
You know, we have talked about the minimum amount of the debt because obviously turning over a $3 debt is not cost effective. I can't tell you for certain whether they have come up with a final decision on that. What they may be doing, and that goes back to the memorandum of understanding, the UJS may say, you know what, we don't think we want to turn over any debt lower than $100 or $1,000. I think it may be, in some respects, perhaps dependent on the agency or the entity that's referring the debt. over, but obviously common sense tells us you can't, those small debts are not cost effective to turn over. But what I'll tell you is that when the debt is turned over, the 20% is, as I understand it, an automatic, because that's basically what funds the whole obligation recovery center. It's a self-funded entity. It's not funded with any state government dollars, as far as I can tell, or as far as I know. It's to be funded by that 20% fee that is applied to the principal of the debt that's handed off to the obligation recovery center for collection.
Go ahead.
Are there any... Would there be any legal issues if an individual was not able to renew their TEGS because of a debt, and then would maybe they made good efforts to either pay the debt, or, I mean, you kind of mentioned some of that bureaucracy that might go into that, that could get complicated, but it seems to be an issue in my head, a red flag, that this person is attempting to renew their TEGS to keep their vehicles legal and then has to walk away driving an illegal car because it doesn't have the tags renewed.
Very fair question, Mr. Chairman. And in fact, during the last Obligation Recovery Center steering meeting that I was at, I posed that question to the Bureau of Administration folks and to the CGI folks. And I said, well, you know, what they indicated to me is that the withholding of your vehicle tags would be an absolute last resort type of a thing. And I said, you know, we're very sensitive to the point that folks need to have their vehicle. They need to have the ability to figure this out when they go to the county treasurer's office, because the county treasurer will have to say, I'm sorry, I can't renew your vehicle tags because you've got this debt that you haven't addressed. But the other thing that CGI and the Obligation Recovery Center do is they have a whole host of different ways that you can set up payment plans and so forth to address your debt obligation. And you can do that without even interacting with a person. As I understand it, they're going to have a computer system where you can set up your own payment plan and say, here's what I'm going to do. And, you know, you just more or less put it on the computer system and it's approved and away you go, and therefore you're fine. The system will say, this person has a debt plan in place, a payment plan in place. We don't want to do any of the other debt collection strategies. We're going to let the payment plan system work out. So I don't know if that was a perfect answer to your question, but we're very appreciative of the whole point that it's a sensitive subject, and I continue to ask those types of questions at the steering committee meetings when I get to them, because that is a pretty big component with the Department of Revenue and our county treasurer partners.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, you may, Senator.
Thank you. Do you know, in your discussions in the work group, if there's a percentage of people who are not paying their debts because they are in conflict of whether they owe the debt or not? And sometimes it's hard to argue with the government if the government says you owe this debt, but this person feels like a mistake has been made, or they don't believe they owe the debt.
Mr. Chairman, the general proposition is that before any debt is turned over to the Obligation Recovery Center, it has been, for lack of a better term, vetted in the sense that the person has had the opportunity to appeal their obligation and so forth. In other words, the debt calculation is final before it's turned over to the Obligation Recovery Center. So, for example, if the Department of Revenue would audit an individual and we would be, you know, they would contest the amount of the audit, and that would be in the administrative hearing system or the courts or whatever, that debt would never be turned over until absolutely everything was done and it was all final and a done deal. And then, and only then, would it be handed off to the Obligation Recovery Center, and that's my understanding with not only Department of Revenue debt, but all the other debt as well. So I don't see the amount of the debt in issue fight being at the Obligation Recovery Center. That should have been taken care of way before it got there.
Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I don't remember things the way I used to, but if I have, it seems that I have a faint recollection of last year, the discussion toward the end of session being that this debt recovery center, or debt, whatever it's called, would generate roughly $800,000 over the interim. It was. Do you recall what the projections were,
Mr. Chairman? No, I don't, and I have no idea what I probably heard them as you did, but I have no idea what they are as I sit here today. I would assume that different types of debt would be, you know, depending on the agency, it kind of depends where it goes. For example, if it is a debt for the Board of Regents, it's not going to come back to the general fund, I guess is my point. It goes back to the college or from where the debt emanated, if that makes sense. But I don't have any numbers with me, and I can't recall them offhand either.
Mr. Chair, do you know, is it accurate to say that there's been nothing collected so far?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, because, again, we've not had the first entity onboarded, and that won't occur until tentatively April month of 2016 when, like I said, UGS is to be the first party to start handing debt off.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, one more, if I might. I recall last year being told that the group who was in charge of the Affordable Care Act website was going to be the one awarded this contract, CGI. And I brought that up, and I was told that they were going to go through the same process as everybody else, that they'd be able to submit a bid and whatnot. How many people did apply? How many people showed interest in serving as our agent in collecting the debt?
Mr. Chairman, I honestly don't know. That'd be a question that I suggest you pose to the Bureau of Administration, who did the request for proposals and so forth. I don't know.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions before we close this meeting? We have a couple bills coming up, and I think we're just going to take these bills. This is Friday, Monday's off, Wednesday. So we're going to take these bills to Wednesday, Senate Bill 52 and Senate Bill 53. It doesn't look like they'll take long.
Should we move them to a different committee?
We were to keep it with Ken. So we'll be doing those two bills next Wednesday. Are there any more comments by the, or no more questions, no more. Any more comments or appreciate all your time. And I'm sure there's a lot of lively discussions we'll have, at least I hope so. So with that, our next scheduled meeting will be next Wednesday. What day is that?
Wednesday.
20th of whatever month this is at 10 o'clock. Thank you very much. And the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Ewing enthusiastically, and seconded by Senator Hagar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned.